For all of you, I'm sure that recently during during COVID, we suddenly had to learn to use devices and to meet in a different way. And you'll remember sometimes somebody maybe didn't quite manage the technology as well as they would have liked to be able to manage the technology. And perhaps we were looking up Auntie Mabel's nose during the prayer meeting or somebody's ear because they forgot it was a video call. And there's all sorts of things. Sometimes somebody's, there would be chaos going on in their house and they didn't realize that their mic was still on, but they were becoming the main part of the show. And then somebody would say, just go on mute. And do you know that moment when you know they want to go on mute and you also know they don't have a clue how to go on mute? And that look of panic and just embarrassment, do you know what I'm talking about? And you feel really sorry for people who just kind of, they want to do what you're asking them to do, but they just feel like they can't quite manage it. They're not quite sure how to do it. Now, after a while, Catherine did teach Nigel how to use technology. And thankfully, we're all grateful that that got sorted out, because let's be honest, we didn't need to see that much of Nigel. Now, as we come into Christianity, it can also be the case that as we learn to live the life of faith, there are phrases and ways that we use our language that can cause within us a desire to do what people are asking us to do, but we're maybe just not entirely sure how to do it. I'm going to show you a video here, hopefully. Who's going to do this for me? Everybody's pointing away to somebody else. Is there a video that you can press play for me? Oh, look, there you go. He's awake. Here we go. I don't know if you can identify with this. I'll fill until we're up on the screen. If you can identify...
Like, how do I do that?
You just gotta, like, soak in God's presence.
Right. No, I hear you.
Chase after him with reckless abandon.
Yes, I totally want to do that. Like, we're on the same page.
Bro, just, like, swim in his sovereignty, you know?
Right.
You just gotta press in, bro, and abide in him.
Fall back into his fierce love. We're on the same page. I don't need you to tell me that.
Bro.
But how do I do that?
Like, stop striving and step into overflow.
Okay. Yeah, but how? Like, tell me, like, dude, like, can we just pause super quick? Like, can you just give me, like, two steps to do that?
Yeah, man, let the fire fall on you.
Okay.
Does anybody know how that feels? You're just asking for advice. You just want to know, what do I do? And you get this language, and you kind of, you want to do it. You want all those things to happen. But those words don't necessarily say what you think that they're saying, because people go, okay, and give up and walk away and go somewhere else instead. It's easy to feel lost sometimes and to know precisely what we mean. This happened to me the other week, and John began the series, and John stepped on a landmine for me, and he said, we're going to step out. Does that remember? We were all stepping out or stepping up. One of the two, there was a season when that was quite popular. And he mentioned that phrase, and I was kind of zoomed away back into my home church, and that was kind of common language. And rise up, that was the phrase, we're going to rise up, which was, it's yes, on board. So that means what? How do we do that? So I was working in a factory. I'm a semi-skilled factory worker. You know, I just needed, willing to help, but not hugely aware or used to church language and church culture. And as he did that, I realized that what that meant for Joseph was that he woke up in the morning, had his cornflakes, and got on with his day. Stepping out meant living. And that's kind of what we understand we mean with all those phrases, is that we get on with the normal process of life whilst believing in God that he is with us and integrating our faith as best as we can. But that's not what we say. And I wonder sometimes if we don't complicate things for ourselves so much that we lose the normality for the sake of the spiritual, in the name of large-scale spiritual excitement and fervor, that we don't lose the practical application of how we're meant to live in the midst of this. You see, the process that we're going to read about here, that Joseph went through in Genesis 42, I believe we're in this week, Genesis 42. If you have your Bible with you, turn, tap, swipe, flick, whatever you do, to Genesis 42. I can read for you. Do we have it on the screen? Genesis 42. If you're not familiar with the story, this section of Joseph's story, let me begin This is the story of how Joseph's brothers were forced to go to Egypt. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you keep looking at each other? I've heard," he said, "that there's grain in Egypt. Go down and buy some from that for us there, so that we may live and not die." Now, parents, I don't know if you can detect the note of frustration in this father's voice. What are you doing looking at each other? Go and do something. No? Is that maybe that's not quite holy enough? Go and do something. Why are you sitting looking at each other? It's a similar tone that the angels used when Jesus ascended. And the angels sort of sidled up alongside the apostles and had to say, "Why are you standing looking at the sky? It's time to get on with it. Why are you looking at each other? Go and buy some grain so that we can live." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he feared that harm might come to him. Thus the sons of Israel were among the people who came to buy grain, for the famine had reached the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. It was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Now pause there. Can we read this and walk through this together and pretend we don't know where it ends? Right? I want an exercise of imagination. Now, I know it's a lot for a Sunday morning to ask you to exercise in this way, but just imagine that you don't know where this is going. I want to pause there before we begin to read into it, because when we read this, sometimes we read into it the knowledge of the ending at the expense of understanding the process that is at play. You see, the process that Joseph has been on up to now gave him character to carry authority with grace. What we're about to see in the scene that is going to unfold is the result and the product of a spoiled brat become a mature man of God. Someone who had the capacity that would surprise us. You see, when you go online to buy yet again from Amazon another package, you go on and you pick whatever it is that you want. You look at the product image, you pick it, and Amazon's job, drop kick it to your door, and it lands, they're out. Mic drop, we're done, thank you very much. You go to the door, you pick up the package, and if the rest of you husbands are like me, your job is as a secondary worker to Amazon who folds up all the cardboard and puts it in the bin. I feel like I work for Amazon in purely the disposal packaging department. However, when God delivers products to us, it is not picked on the basis of an image that we fix and we think, "I desire that, that's what I want, and I'll order that." Everything in our lives has trained us and teaches us consistently to look, to see, to desire, and to acquire. However, when it came to what God wants to bring to Joseph's life, he has designed something for Joseph that he cannot see. He doesn't know that he wants what God has for him, because God has only given him within him the blueprint. The process that is building his character and developing tenacity and strength within him that was not evident at the earliest parts of the story that we've been hearing. If you need to catch up and find out about that story, go online and all the messages, the wonderful messages from Phil there last week and from John as well, who wasn't too bad. You can catch up and familiarize yourself with this story. You see, when God delivers things, rather than just drop kicking it and it arrives at your door, instead, he puts you through a process so that when that finally does arrive for you, you have the character and capacity to carry it, so that you can sustain the weight that it brings with it, so that you can manage, not to your own detriment or anybody else's, but you are ready. You carry only an instinct that God might have something for me. But I don't know what that's going to look like. You see, God isn't quite the same as Amazon. He takes responsibility for the process, not just for the delivery, the process of preparation. Now, there are some strands that have been present within the story of Joseph that you may not have heard before. Maybe you have. But if we pretend for a moment that we don't know where the story is going and that we don't have insight that Joseph didn't have, there are moments in the story where it is possible to say Joseph may have not been aware that what happened to him wasn't deliberate. You see, when Joseph had two dreams, his first dream, his brothers did not receive it warmly. And having not learned his lesson, completely missed the boat, he shared his second dream, this time again with his father and mother present, and they rebuked him for it. Now, Joseph's grandfather was Isaac, whose brother was... Oh, look at that. Bible points, gold stars. Any gold stars in Sunday school? Get the gold star. Esau, who had been driven away from his home. Isaac himself had been the subject of a moment in which his father called himself to him to come. When he took him up a mountain and Abraham led him, he was led towards a place where there was going to be a sacrifice. And he said, "Son, come to me here." And he said in reply, "Hineni," in Hebrew. Hineni, which means, "Here I am." This word is only used three times in the Bible, and twice, once with Joseph and once with Isaac. "Here I am to present myself to you, Father." It is the same word that Joseph used then, when after sharing his dream and being rebuked for it, the father called him to see him and said, "Come to me." And he said, "Hineni, here I am." It is a word that anticipates a call and a direction being given, something being imparted. His uncle, Esau, at that moment, had been kicked out of the family, the older child. It didn't always precipitate good things. It is possible to read in the story of Joseph that Joseph didn't know his dad didn't kick him out. It is possible, as we read through this chapter, in the emotional responses that he has, that it was news to him that his brothers and his fathers weren't as one in the plan to get rid of him. Because there was precedent in the family where the elder brother, him being the child of Rachel, to him and his brother Benjamin, the only two children of that favored wife. Am I being kicked out? Is it my turn? Is that what's happened? Did these brothers do this on my dad's command? It's not to say he definitely did, and we're arguing from silence to suggest it, but neither does it say he didn't. And in fact, I would suggest, as we read through the process of his responses to what they're saying, it is very possible that is the case. But here's the thing. If he had the perception that everything that happened to him after he was thrown into the pit came after what had been done, he could have read the story like he was being rejected and settled on that version of events, having no other evidence. Because you see, Joseph didn't hear that his father kept it in his heart, what had happened to him. It says that Jacob rebuked him out loud, but he reserved within himself and pondered it and kept it to himself. He didn't see his father's reaction to him being lost. He didn't see his tears. He didn't see when his father held the coat dipped in blood and presumed it meant his death, the devastation that happened in his heart. None of that he was aware of. It is more than possible, I would suggest, that the story Joseph walked away with was that this is what had been given to him. So he carries this then. It is possible that he carries this perspective that all the continual rejection, the strands of rejection and unfairness and forgottenness and being used would perhaps suggest why when he got to Potiphar's house, he didn't try and contact his family. He didn't try and get back in touch and reestablish connection again. Church, it is possible for us to go through normal, everyday family life circumstances that we all have to live with and to build a story around it that may be wrong. And you live under these conditions of rejection, and you live under these conditions of perhaps fractured family, difficult relationships. Now, be very clear, I am not talking about circumstances of explicit abuse and harm, but I am talking about where, just look, did you ever have an argument in your family? Now, I know you're very holy in Stratford, and this is very unlikely, so it's probably just us. But now and again, in Irish families, we may have a Barney. There was far too much laughter over there for that. Do you know, we never heard the phrase before we came to England in 2008, throw in a paddy. Racism. I tell you. You see, in Northern Ireland, I grew up during a civil war. You don't have to be a different colour for people to hate you. We're not that fussy. You'd be exactly the same colour, exactly the same religion, technically. You see, it is possible that all these strands come together, accompanying Joseph on the course of his days, and he chooses to get up every morning and remain faithful anyway to what he has to do that day. Not suspending his well-being in the corner until everything is sorted and he just has to survive and nail it down. Instead, he stepped up and stepped in, and all of those phrases, he got on with his day. He chose to maintain a good attitude, a better way. He chose to show kindness to the people that he worked with. He chose to be a benefit within the household within which he worked. How do we know? Because the people around him invested trust in him. You don't invest trust in someone who is troublesome. Someone who's constantly causing drama. Does anybody know anybody who constantly causes? Put your hand down, Catherine. For goodness sake, leave him alone. He's had enough. Some people, they thrive on a sense of drama. They want to create around them all the time trouble. Does anybody have any family? If they're not here, you can put your hand up. But if they are here, just nod. Thank you. Some people, they do live that. But the impression we have from the story of Joseph as he has continued up to this point is that he didn't carry that sort of spirit with him. Now, the rebuke was the last thing that he heard from his father's lips, and he found himself thrown into a life that he never asked for. But then we see at the start of this chapter that the whole, not just the culture, not just the geopolitics, but the conditions of the country changed in such a way that forced a move to begin to come. There was a famine, not for the last time. Abraham, the great-granddad of Joseph, had to go to Egypt during a famine that happened in the land. Each time, Isaac nearly had to go to Egypt, but didn't quite go, decided against it. Each time they go to Egypt, they are driven there by circumstances that didn't give them a choice. That is as much stepping in. That is stepping up. That is letting the fire fall. Did you hear that phrase he used? Swim in his sovereignty. I tell you, I'd never heard that one before, but if I had been given that as a piece of advice, oh, I tell you, I would have laid hands roughly, just like they did in Acts. Flipping heck. The spirit of slap came upon it. Anyway. Because we need to know what to do. And what to do is what's in front of you. It is just as spiritual. It is just as important. It is every bit a constituent element of your development in God and your spiritual growth and maturity as your prayer, as your worship, as your attendance on a Sunday. It is as important to your maturing process that you get on with your days and what's in front of you. Do not become victimized by your circumstances and frozen in a moment that has happened to you, according to a story that you've told yourself, convincing yourself it's the only thing that is true. Therefore, suspending your entire life and capacity to act, live, move, and work in the name of the kingdom in the meantime. Stop waiting for perfection before you can live a good, abundant life. I believe God has that for you now, where you're at, with what you have around you, with the people, even if they're Nigel. You see, the truth is, you're getting it hard today, Nigel. I'm so sorry. You see, the truth was, Judah, the only reason there was any voice that would try and help Joseph was because Judah spoke up, and Judah only spoke up on his behalf not to have him killed, because he thought, well, we're not going to profit if we kill him, so why don't we just make a bit of money out of it and sell him? Thanks, bro. Way to make me feel loved and welcome. We're going to get rid of him, yes, don't get me wrong, but if we can have a bit of money, then, you know, all the better. The only instinct. And yet we find circumstances have conspired in such a way that the worst motivation of the people who were committedly against someone did not have the final word. you can come to believe that someone else's worst actions, worst motivations, and bad intent have the final word on your life and have led to the circumstances you're in and defined you. But you have to make a choice to do that. And I don't believe God wants to raise victims. Genuinely, you have power in your hands to make it different. That does not mean that it makes it easy and it's not glib and it's not complacent and it doesn't undercook an appreciation of what it is that you have had to go through. But it does say that will have a place, but it will never have the final word because God is still writing your story. Through the course of your days, as you continue to live and move, you will trust that the same God that conspires events in such a way that Joseph's brothers come down to Egypt and they think they're going down to get grain, they are finding an incubator for a nation because it is only here in the stability of an existing empire that 12 brothers could grow to become a nation that then God would call out of slavery to become their own people. It was this mechanism that led to God's plan. What you intended for bad, we will hear in a couple of weeks. So we find this cycle, possibly in Joseph's mind, initiated by his father, puts him in a place where God does something good anyway. Because yes, there is suffering in the midst of it. How do we know? Well, let me remind you that the story continues from verse 6 in Genesis 42. Now Joseph was governor over the land. It was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves down and put their faces to the ground. And Joseph saw his brothers. He recognized them, but treated them like strangers and spoke harshly to them. "Where'd you come from?" he said. They said, "We're from the land of Canaan to buy food." Although Joseph had recognized his brothers, they didn't recognize him. Joseph also remembered the dreams that he had dreamed about them, and he said to them, "Na, na, 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 told ya." Joseph said to them, "You're spies. You've come to see the nakedness of the land." They said to him, "No, my lord. Your servants have come to buy food. We're all sons of one man. We're honest men. Your servants have never been spies." But he said to them, "No, no, no, no. You've come to see the nakedness of the land." "We, your servants," they said, "are 12 brothers, the sons of a certain man in the land of Canaan. The youngest, however, is not now with our father, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It is just as I have said to you, you are the spies. Here is how you shall be tested. As Pharaoh lives, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Let one of you go and bring your brother, while the rest of you remain in prison, in order that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you, or else, as Pharaoh lives, surely you are spies." And he put them all together in prison for 3 days. Now, he didn't miss his opportunity, let's be honest, putting all of them in prison just for a few days, just to kind of, you know, a slow bake, really, let's just say. It was nothing too sudden. He didn't put them to death, to be fair. But perhaps he needed some time. Events have conspired in such a way that he didn't seek, he didn't try and manufacture, and he didn't create. And yet the goodness of God was such that events in the world changed in such a way that all he had to do was put one foot in front of another. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay here when you're imprisoned. The rest of you go and carry the grain for your famine to your household. And again, and bring your youngest brother to me. Thus your words will be verified and you will not die." Now there follows a conversation between the brothers that they do not know Joseph can understand. And in this moment is the first hint that he has a different version of the story that he could have assumed to be true. We see further down as they begin to talk, "This is revenge for us for how we treated Joseph. We should never have thrown him, and it's come on us now. This despair has come on us because of what we did to him." And Joseph overheard their words to each other and not understanding that they were being understood. It says that Joseph turned away from them and cried. He turned away from them and cried. Now, shortly after, He turned away. It says he returned to them. So what I don't think he did was this. No. He had to retreat away from them completely. No. He had to remove himself from them. So strong and deep and traumatic was this upwelling of realization as he heard them say, I told you we shouldn't have killed him. The eldest of the children was Reuben, who had tried to stop them from killing them altogether. I spoke up for him. I told you we shouldn't have done this. So he didn't want that to happen. In Joseph's mind, as he sees this, he sees unfold before him the inner dynamics of the brotherhood and the way that they actually handled this event. And it's not the way he thought it was. What else am I wrong about? The only way I can know is how. Go and get my father. Maybe he didn't want me to go. Maybe he didn't send me away. Maybe I've had it wrong. I wonder. How can I find a way to force them to get them here? Well, let's do it like this. Because not only do I need to find this out, but they're living in a famine. God's brought me here in such a way that he gave me the ability to interpret dreams that would enable me to provide for this entire empire, the biggest in the known world at the time, perhaps apart from Persia. And as he stood there in the midst of it all, he saw the hand of God. I suggest he saw the hand of God and realized they need to be here. They need rescued. They need to stay here. They can't keep traveling back and forth to Canaan. Not only is it too dangerous, but there's no food and the famine is only going to get worse. It's going to last for 7 years. We're only a year in. Let's get them here. Not only did Joseph see that he needed to find out more information, but he had the capacity for kindness to the people who he had always assumed were against him. Not every enemy is an enemy. Not everyone who you think hates you. Oftentimes, they're not really thinking about you at all. Devastating as that is. The reality is the stories we tell ourselves about the relationships in our lives can be wrong. But do we have the softness of heart to let God rewrite the stories we inscribe in our hearts? Do we have the capacity to unfreeze those pictures that have set within us and created places in which bitterness begins to dwell? Perhaps things begin to arise in our attitude and there is a poison that has come to the wellspring of our hearts. Your life is not necessarily only the product of the worst moments other people have inflicted on you. But by faith, Joseph moved into the rest of his days. Just like his family before him, Hebrews 11 says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to set out for a place he was to receive in his inheritance. Something he would not see, but God had implanted and imprinted within him. He would follow it and move into what God has for him. Fiona, for goodness sake, Fiona, here, wake her up there. No, Fiona, you've got a big streak on you there, love. Could you just wipe that off? Oh, hang on. You see, the problem is, oh, well done, thank you. The streak's gone now. The problem is, events can so conspire in the course of our lives that we are given a view of the world in which we blame other people for the problem residing in the view, way we view the world. Fiona didn't have a streak on her. My glasses did. Some of us go through life and we keep blaming other people for stuff that is the product of what has happened to us in the course of our day. Sometimes we've got a crack in the windscreen and no longer everything we look at now is affected by this crack in the windscreen in our lives. And the relationships that we engage with are forever tainted by this damage that we have gone through. I believe what we see in the example of Joseph dealing with his brothers is the active process of someone who chooses not to live within the frozen narrative of the past, but has the capacity to let God change it. He didn't let that be the defining characteristic of his character. Instead, he began to become something better. Yes, there is an emotional register in his life. Yes, he was hurt by what had happened. This is evidenced by his heart being so soft that he had to cry when he was confronted with the circumstances of his family coming to him. But he didn't permit the emotional register to dominate his day. It didn't eclipse his entire being. You see, he kept his glasses clean. He was able to continue to acknowledge that, but not let him swallow him whole. If we can resist letting our expectations fix our view of the way life should have been, the way things should have been done, the way people should have behaved, if we can let them off the hook, simply stepping out, to go back to the language at the start, means just acting well. What does it mean to step out? What does it actually mean and look like? It means waking up tomorrow and getting on with the normality of your day with conscious trust placed in God. And in that, walking in conscious partnership with him in your interactions with others, becoming increasingly fruitful and effective in your faith as you serve others, as you put their interests ahead of your own, unlike others in the office who compete and strive for prominence. Instead, it means forgiving and the flexibility to change the story you've inscribed over your life when new evidence comes to life. It means being quick to forgive and slow to get angry, quick to let go. It may be God is trying to write a new story in your life, which means you have to be willing to let go of the familiar and the comfortable. This crisis that happened to Joseph, this sudden confrontation of events, I don't mean a crisis like a crashing disaster that suddenly arrives, but this unexpected moment that prompts clarity is an opportunity. Winston Churchill described something similar when he said, "Men occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of them pick themselves up and hurry off as if nothing had happened." Joseph didn't do that. I'm going to ask John to come just as we prepare to come to the table to communion. I believe that the only way to become everything you were meant to be, to grow into, is to accept that God did not create you to be the victim of every whim of nature, red and tooth and claw, attacking you randomly at any moment, but that you become an ambassador of the kingdom of God, like stars planted in the firmament, shining as beacons of hope that disdain revenge in favor of mercy, that seek God for those who meant them harm. Because we understand that their worst cannot eclipse God's good. You see, the thing is, God will work it out in the end. God will take every single experience of your life, no matter how dark, no matter how deep, no matter how difficult, no matter how abusive, no matter how violent, no matter how many tears were shed, no matter how many bruises were produced. Ask me how I know. God will bring you through them. And he will cause you to produce good despite those circumstances. He will do good. And if you don't see good yet, it's because it's not the end. He is continuing to work with you. There are over 175,000 words in the English translation of the Bible. God's words to us that seek to speak to the last and the least and the lost, to reveal God's goodness to every one of us, every single one of us. And it may be today that you're in circumstances of difficulty and you have written into the course of your days that this is who I am now. Do not do it. As we come to this table of communion today, as we approach this moment, I wonder, is it time to place all that you are into God's hands? And as we leave this building and step towards the door, we're doing all of those spiritual things that we speak of in that moment, getting into the car and driving away. We do so in trust that God is with us and he is writing the story of our lives continually, and he isn't done and he's not finished and it's not the end and it's not the definition yet because we haven't got there. I feel some of us have become kind of, you know that song, is it U2, Stuck in a Moment? No nods whatsoever. You're all so holy. Or it's the wrong band. And if I had said something else, Elvis Presley. Yeah, there you go. We become stuck in a moment. And we let that moment become the definition of the rest of our days. Can I encourage you today to resist that and to perhaps place your trust in God?
Amen. Thanks, Tom. So we're just going to, for the few moments now, we're going to come and take communion, then we're going to draw our time to a close. I want to invite